Hello and welcome back to The Front Page, the show looking at all the big hot topics from the world of racing. It is York this week. We've got plenty to go through on the show and delighted to be in the studio. My name is James Stevens and we're joined by Chris Cook from The Front Runner. Chris, really good week of racing, isn't it?
Really exciting, yeah, and necessary, I think, as well, because we've had a bit of a lull since Goodwood, which has allowed the world of racing to sort of break out into any number of fights. And I think what we need is some serious horse racing so that we can settle down and remember why we're here.
Yeah, and enjoyed your column this week where you sort of, it was almost like a confession boost of admitting to three odds on favourites in 2001 and needing that bit of a boost.
Yeah, exactly that. I find those columns are really popular when you talk about, you know, the time when you had a few bets and it went horribly wrong. Yeah, people enjoy that sort of sense of somebody else is doing even worse than they are. Yeah. The theme of it was, you know, when you get that feeling that things are so bad, they can't really get worse. And it sort of feels like it's gone that way a bit for racing lately. You know, there's so many headwinds, as it's now popular to describe them, going against us, that you sort of, you just feel like laughing about it a little bit. You know, you stop taking some of these news stories seriously because there's so many bad stories piled one on top of another. Like I say, let's get back to some really good horse racing and think about that instead.
Yeah, that's a bit of a dry note to start the show
on. Yeah, it's
a bit,
but
nevertheless,
in fairness, the racing is really good, as we'll get to that in a bit.
It is. And we're joined a front page debutant as well. We had Liam last week. We've got Connor Fenley joining us from Ireland. Connor, front page debut. How confident are you for winning another prize for Ireland from Britain?
Very confident, James. Behind me, I think I have typical Irish weather, so hopefully the rain pelting off the window won't provide too much white noise. But looking forward to my debut on the front page.
Good. Right, well, we'll get stuck into story number one, and it does come from Connor. Connor, what's been happening in Ireland? Quite a controversial story, which is really interesting going forward ahead of the jump season.
Yeah, so last month on July 26th, Horse Racing Ireland announced a new initiative to, I suppose, address the yawning gap between the middle to lower tier trainers and the top tier trainers. They introduced a series of 60 races, which is going to be confined to trainers who trained less than 50 winners in either of the last two seasons. So the series is going to include bumpers, maiden hurdles, beginners chases, handicap hurdles. And it emerged early last week that the four affected trainers, which are William Mullins, Gordon Elliott, Henry de Bromhead and Gavin Cromwell, are considering taking legal action against HRI in the series. It's understood that a letter was sent to HRI from the four trainers informing them of their intention to commence legal proceedings if the series goes ahead. So obviously this has elicited plenty of polarising debate. On one side, you've people saying that this is, I suppose, catastrophic ambition on the part of the four trainers affected. It's 60 races. There was 1,504 races in the jumps program last season. It's only 4% of the program. So plenty of people are saying, you know, why can't they leave these races to smaller to middle tier trainers? On the other side, you have people saying you can't punish success, and these people have got to the top of their game on merit, and you can't penalise them for making a success of their business. Now, there's been calls on HRI for a long time to introduce some sort of measures to address that yawning gap. Owen Griffin wrote a great column in the Racing Post last year that's worth revisiting. Shark Hanlon has spoke out in the past. And also there's been pressure, I'd imagine there's been pressure at governmental level. HRI have had a lot of tense meetings with the Public Accounts Committee over the last 18 months. And it has been mentioned in those meetings that there has been a concern regarding the concentration of prize money in few hands. Brian Stanley, chair of the Public Accounts Committee, has mentioned it a few times. So, you know, horse racing in Ireland is largely state funded. There was a 3.2 million increase in funding for 2024, resulting in a figure of 76 million going into racing. And that has resulted in record levels of prize money of 69.4 million. So I'd imagine HRI have had pressure from a governmental level to introduce a series like this. If the four trainers do take legal action, I think HRI will find it difficult to justify this in a legal sense, given it is a restriction on trainers. But it's going to be fascinating to see how it plays out over the coming weeks and months.
Yeah, absolutely. And very interesting to read the quote from HRI's Director of Racing, Jonathan Mullen, who said that it would give trainers the confidence to attract new owners into the yards with the knowledge there is a programme of races there to support them, which is, I thought, was quite an interesting quote, considering we've seen a lot of the big British or owners who have traditionally had horses in Britain go to Gordon Elliott, Willie Mullins, Henry de Bromhead. And interesting to see that this was sort of a point that's come back there, Connor, that the smaller trainers, perhaps, is that sort of a struggle that they're having? Is getting owners, is that one of the main reasons, do you think, behind this initiative that was put forward?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, owners are the lifeblood of any yard. They're the ones who provide investment. If you don't have owners, you don't have anything. Maybe Willie not so much, but Gordon, Gavin and Henry do have plenty of syndicate-owned horses and low-grade horses. Like, if you look at Willie, I think only 5% of his winners last season came from handicaps. But the three other trainers, either a quarter or more for each of them, came from handicaps. And Gordon, Gavin and Henry do have a lot of syndicate-owned horses who are looking for, maybe one, maybe 2 days out a season. And there's nothing to suggest that they mightn't come in these 60 races. So these top trainers are very protective of their owners and their owners' interests. So I wasn't entirely surprised to see them take legal action, to be honest.
A little amazing stat that Connor just smuggled in there. Was it 5% of all Willie Mullins' winners were in handicaps? Mm. That's fascinating, because of course in any major handicap, his horses, if they happen to be in there, get well back, because it's got his name next to it.
Absolutely.
5%.
Now, Chris, you've written quite a lot, you've spoken a lot on the show about, Willie Mullins' dominance is back. It's only been two months since we've gone there, we're back there again.
Yeah.
Or as in Irish training dominance. You've talked a lot about powerhouses and the super stables and stuff. Where do you sit on this?
So I think this isn't just a jump racing thing, but I mean, it's more of an issue for jump racing right now. I think generally speaking, the sport has to think seriously about how powerful the major stables can be allowed to become. And is the sport entitled to do something to intervene and say, look, there's a ceiling here. Ideally, it's something that our leaders would have had the foresight to address 30 or 40 years ago, when yards were much smaller and people had no particular ambition to get to sort of 200 horses or things like that. But we are where we are. If you look at the situation in Ireland, the quantity of prize money that Willie Mullins is salting away each year relative to, say, the 10th place trainer in Ireland is way, way more than it was 10, 15, 20 years ago. And all of that money is available to be sort of reinvested in new talent coming into his yard. So every year the job that faces his rivals gets harder and harder. The scales are only going to tip more and more one way.
And the gap continues to grow.
Yeah, if nothing is done to address it. Now, I think when you're running a sport which is supposed to have popular appeal and which is getting a lot of public funding in Ireland, you do have a responsibility to try and, maintain the entertainment value, to maintain some sort of plurality among the participants. I think the people running the sport are perfectly entitled to take quite a restrained bit of action like this. 60 races, as Connor said, it's 4% of the programme. Mm. To just try and maintain that kind of breadth among trainers at the base of the pyramid. I don't suppose in reality the big four trainers would quarrel about what's being proposed. I think what we're seeing here is some sort of power games going on. They want to say, well, okay, this far, but no further, right? Mm. This is not going to be the start of something. It's not going to be doubling the number of races involved in this program every year, because then that obviously impacts on what they're able to do. I wouldn't think that any of the four of them can be really worried about the bottom line. Or about some of the trainers who would benefit from this series being serious challengers to them. We'll see how it pans out. I don't think I'm with Connor. I think probably in court HRI would win this, because I don't think courts are all that delighted about the idea of taking over responsibility for saying how sports should run themselves. I would think their instinct is going to be that each sport has considerable latitude in what it can do to control its own rules and regulations and procedures, and we already have lots of races where, in terms of who can participate, horses are limited. We had a race only for grey horses the other day. There's lots of races where the type of jockey who can take part is limited. We've got things like the Shergar Cup, where you don't get to choose your jockey; it's chosen for you. In lots of other ways, the sport exerts control about who can take part and how. In terms of horses and jockeys, and I don't honestly see a principle why it shouldn't be trainers as well. As long as it's reasonable and justified and proportionate, and I don't think there's much argument that this is. I think, to be honest, I would argue the other way, that we're facing a pretty serious problem in terms of helping these trainers to remain competitive, and it's going to take more than this to ensure that those stables can survive, commercially in the future.
Yeah, I think we can look at this from a British perspective for 2 points. So firstly, the jumps standings, is the jump from fourth to fifth is pretty fair in Britain. It's not, last year was obviously a little bit different because Willie Mullins won the championship who trains in Ireland. But the jump isn't as large as it is in Ireland. Joseph O'Brien had 20 winners, was in fifth place, but actually Philip Rothwell had 41 winners, but not as much prize money, so below. Whereas in Britain, it's quite a steady decline down the table, as you would expect. So interested to see that. However, I think the BHL will be watching this closely, because the idea came back in the studio. We discussed this before about restricting the number of runners in a certain big handicap, which was mentioned before, which didn't go down too well.
No.
We're still not quite sure if ever that will come to fruition. But also, to watch over to Ireland with a bit of an eye. I wonder what's happening
here. Oh,
definitely.
HRI have done something brave here, and they're leading the way.
Interesting. Right, we'll go on to the weekend, the week's action, shall I say, at York. But first, here's a bit more on the Racing Post Insider. Okay, on to story two, and what an exciting week of racing we've got from York. It's the Ebor meeting starting on Wednesday with a fantastic Judgmont International. Chris, tell us more. This is going to be pretty special.
Yeah, it is. I was sort of gearing up to say, what great week of racing it is, but we're really now talking about one race, because the Judgmont International, looking at the declarations that have just come through, it's going to be race of the year, I would think, in Britain, and maybe in Europe. As it has been in the past, it's not completely unprecedented, but it's one of those where you just look through the list of contenders and start to get the vapours about, it's like a throwback Group 1 sort of 10, 15, 20 years ago, when you could sort of take it for granted that lots of interesting horses would turn up. And so we've got 13 declared anyway. Obviously, City of Troy is at the heart of it all. But despite having such a huge reputation, he's scared nobody off, it seems. In fact, if I was in Ballydoyle right now, I'd be going, what is the deal? Why are all these people so keen to take us on? Blue Stocking's in there. Now, I suppose with her, they still have a chance, don't they, to say, maybe not, and go for the Yorkshire Oaks instead.
Possibly,
a day later. They must be looking at the forecast and hoping for rain. If rain doesn't show up, maybe tonight or tomorrow morning, then they could sort of take the conservative course and stick to the fillies race. But even without her, you've got Zarakem, Jaretsa, the Japanese horse, Alflela, the course specialist, is in there, Maljum, Ambiente Friendly, taking on City of Troy again, Isroar is in there, Calandagan, the French raider.
Fascinating horse, isn't he? He is,
based on what he did at Royal Ascot, could be anything, and will have lots of supporters. Docklands is in there, which is slightly surprising me. I don't suppose many people would be seeing him as a strong contender. Others as well, Ghost Writers in there. There's possibilities everywhere you look.
Yeah.
You've got to love a Group 1 where there's going to be a real division of opinion among punters, and people will be sort of spending a long time looking at this, thinking, how is it going to play out tactically? Who's going to be trying to come from the back? Will they get a clear run? City of Troy's been odds on for a couple of weeks, but he's not like spiraling odds on. He's not getting shorter and shorter. I think there's 5-4 on this morning. And it feels like as people come to terms with how many good horses are turning up, you know, he might drift again. You know, he might be even money or, you know, odds against at some stage. Would you have complete confidence in him? Because the Eclipse, you can read it one of two ways, can't you? The performance was not that sort of dominating victory people were expecting, but the form has been franked. You know, the runner-up went and won.
Yeah. And he still won
the other day.
Know, even good horses, good horses can win races even when they're not at their best, and that's what I would stand by as my logic. I would definitely take him on because, as you say, it's an absolute super race, and you just, I'm not sure I want to be on a 4-5, 8-11 shot on that race. Well, when there's so much quality about, and 13 runners as well will be interesting. It's an interesting sort of complex.
Absolutely.
I'm sure they weren't you know, when they sort of planned it out as far as they have, thinking, hey, we're going to have a really interesting jumble of 12 possible rivals. It's interesting.
I mean, I think that's part of the reason, isn't it? Why, when you've got a horse like him with a big rep, you say, well, we're going for this race in the hope that everyone else will scatter to the other races. But it, almost the opposite of that has happened. You know, maybe some people are taking him on in order to sort of prove themselves, which is exactly how it should be. So that's a real thriller. I'd be interested in Connor's view on this race. Would he have the faith in the Fav?
Let's see. Connor, is City of Troy yes or no?
Yeah, I'd expect him to bounce back to his best. You know, he was one of the most impressive Derby winners I've seen. There's no fighting for recording. He wasn't impressive in Sandown. Yeah, Arif kind of advertised the farm well, but it was a weak form in Group 1, to be fair. Aidan mentioned in the aftermath of Sandown that the soft ground may have blood to see you try, and I'd be happy enough to go along with that. Ambiente friendly, I'm not sure about him. I don't know whether he's a bit of a conundrum. I don't know whether he wants to drop and trip, or he's not too fond of the battle. I mean, he came there to win the Irish Derby at the Curragh last day, and he ended up finishing third, so I'm not entirely sure about him. Glanagan, I'd be completely against him. I think the bare form of the King Edwards is way off what's required in the context of this race, and I thought the leaders went way too fast in front that day. I'm always very wary of horses that are held up of a very strong pace. I think winning margins can be very much exaggerated. So
yeah.
I'd be very keen to take him on. I'd expect City try to get back on track. Whether he's a punting proposition, I think he was 11-10 this morning. He might be. I don't think that's a terrible race. But I wouldn't be against throwing a few bid on Israel for John and Teddy Gosling. I thought he was very impressive in the Wolfden last day. Good second to Passenger at Chester Town 4. Passenger is a classy horse. And it was only last year he best Adair up his stick at Newmarket. So he's a very classy operator, and I could see him sneak the place.
Okay, interesting. Now, it's more than a judgment as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
We're getting ready today to go, how great is this week? I mean, we've got a Numfort with 5 Group 1 horses in there.
Right.
We've got Yorkshire Oaks, which, I mean, I put here headline by Blue Stocking. That's now a question mark. We all have a bit of a question mark in racing, don't we? We don't want to know where it's running. We want the question mark.
I guess, yeah.
And then the Ebor. I mean, you talk about throwbacks. 9-1 joint favourites for a big Saturday handicap.
That's completely crazy. I mean, the Ebor is one of those races this week where I'm just going to... I think I have to leave that until we get there and find out where the decks are. I suppose there won't be many dropouts for the prize money that's on offer. But you know, there's so many sort of group ones and other group races along the way that are really interesting and rewarding to tackle. And then I think I'll save the handicap for a special treat for Saturday morning. I mean, the Nunthorpe is the other big one because, you know, the King George at Goodwood was, you know, so enjoyable to watch. And it's basically that race again, plus. And it's Fura is Fav. Because there's actually quite a significant turnaround at the weights. I think, is it £6?
That's right, yeah.
That she's swung around with Big Ebbs, and she was only beaten a short head. It's for a Big Ebbs. Believing in there, and Believing's really interesting, ran a big race at Goodwood, and it keeps running big races. Regionally won the Group 1 last year. Bradsell's in there. Only had the one run so far this year in France. Really interesting contender again. Living the Dream, I was speaking to Adam West last week, and you know, he always talks a great game, right?
Yeah.
But he really had me believing, you know, the line about, well, you know, this is what we've been aiming at all year. Yeah, okay, he hasn't won since the Ladnonthorpe, but he's, you know, he ran really well at the Breeders' Cup, doesn't he? He's a top class horse. And there have been one or two sort of decisions that he would take again if he could about the way the season's gone so far. But he says this is a horse that's building, building, building. He's getting better each race. And, you know, when you get to York on Friday, you're going to see the real live in the dream. And he'll be a contender again. I think he's, what, 12 to 1 or something like that. Mm. So we've already got back to the stage a bit like last year where he's not really being taken all that seriously. But maybe we need to rethink that.
Okay. Now, we talk a lot here about racing's challenges, the struggles. The Ebor Festival as a whole, it's really a sign of what the goodness that racing can do, because this is the upward trajectory this meeting has shown. I mean, the quality on show, you've got the Japanese interest in the Judmont is huge from a global racing perspective.
Yes.
Obviously, World Pool will be involved in some of the meetings. The interesting thing I think York will be watching is the performances in the City of York. You know, this is a race which, of course, we'd love to get Group 1 status for, to become the first all-age 7 furlong Group 1. Didn't quite make the cut last year. I mean, with audience in there, if he was to put up a big performance, that could possibly it. I mean, there's so many different angles to look at this meeting as a sort of template for for what a big festival should be like in many ways. In the way I look at this meeting anyway.
And you have the good two-year-old races in there, the Jim Crack and the Lowther, which are so often influential. But I think what also a thing that York gets, which other tracks really envy, is that sort of local support and the local enthusiasm. You know, it seems to be just something you can take for granted. It's that they get a big, enthusiastic, noisy, opinionated crowd there. It's just, you know, that's the benefit of being racing in the heart of Yorkshire. Mm. You still have that vocal support, which, you know, when you're there, really adds to the proceedings. You know, people care about what's happening on the track, and that, you know, you can't buy that.
No, and you've done many, many days in York. What were the sort of standouts for you at that meeting?
I haven't done that many.
Okay.
I guess because, you know, it's a hell of a way from Cheltenham, that's for one thing. And, you know, the Racing Post is sort of a strong team of Northern reporters who will be covering it. So I shall be watching from afar as per usual. I mean, great memories of, you know, those. I tell you, one time I was there, it was when Rodrigo de Triano won the Judmont International, which I think, having looked back at the race recently, you know, the various runnings of the race over the years, you're probably having to go back that far to find a Judmont International that's quite as strong in terms of depth as this one. There would have been 12 or 13 runners that day as well. And Dr. Devious, the Derby winner, was fourth. I mean, the fact that he was sent off at 8-1 as the Derby winner, and then he'd been second in the Irish Derby, beaten a fair way by St. Joe, but still second. He was 8-1 for that Judmont International because there were so many interesting horses in there. I was obviously a young racing fan at the time, and I managed to sort of stroke Dr. Devious's backside as he walked past, having come in fourth, and that was a real thrill to be able to touch a Derby winner. I don't suppose for security reasons that you'd be able to do that these days. That was a heck of a race, Leicester winning on Rodrigo. Mm. And hopefully, you know, there'll be some, you know, young racing fans there this week who will be similarly fired up by the experience.
Hopefully so. You've sadly sat on the fence on a Monday morning looking at the handicap with a 9-1 favourite.
I mean,
shameful,
I think that's the
Chris.
Only responsible
I'm surprised
thing
you haven't given us a big
do,
prize
my
winner.
Goodness.
Connor, is there anything that's caught your eye across the week that we should look out for?
Yeah, I think Henry Brahman has a great chance of landing the Ebor with Magical Zoe. She is a cracking hurdler. She's a grade three and a listed winner. She ran a fantastic race when she was fourth in the county hurdle in March when she overcame a pace bias. I mean, they went to crawl in the county hurdle and she ran on really encouragingly. She won it down rail on the flash very well on her penultimate start. It was a very close third. She was beaten just over a length in a Group 3 at Ferry House last time out. She's having her handicap debut on the flash, and she's a really lovely mare. I think she's going to have a really good chance. Also, Aidan O'Brien is running he plans to run the Lion in Winter in the Acom Stakes on Wednesday. I think he's a really exciting see the stars called. He was very impressive on debut at the Curragh, beating Currawood and Ides of March. Ides of March bolted up last week, so he looks a really exciting colt as well.
If you need me to get off the fence, by the way, I would not tipping
that's
anything.
That's a real bite there, Chris.
In the Ebor, but yeah. The Judmont International, I think Zara Kem General 16-1, I'd be surprised if that held. He's exactly the sort of horse that'll interest people like Pricewise and Paul Keeley and Shorten Up, and he just shrewdy in inverted commas type of horse. whether it works or not, I don't know, but he's going to attract some interest in the market, I would think, at some stage, having run really well at Royal Ascot behind August Rodin.
Good. You're off the fence, and I retract my comments, Chris. I take it all back. On to a final story, and it's my story here, and it's about some worrying times. We've talked about affordability checks for punters, but now it's beginning to creep into ownership, it seems. After Paddy Brennan spoke this week about a recent change affecting syndicate owners, they'll have to provide a full onboarding process for new accounts, essentially providing information and financial documentation to be able to join a syndicate. That will affect syndicates with 10 or fewer members, or indeed anyone who has a 10% or larger share. They'll need to provide a complete source of funds with documentation, things like a P60. And it's another sign, perhaps, of racing being looked at in a different way. This is more or less so sort of from a gambling perspective, but more from a change of policy from Weatherby's Racing's Bank, which looks after a number of syndicates, if not most. Since 2021, the BHA have had to have rules in place so that syndicates are looked after and restricted, and rules in that sense. There are discussions between Racing, Weatherby Bank, the BHA, and the Racehorse Owners Association about this. A BHA spokesman told the Racing Post this week they were fully committed to simplifying and streaming the administration, and they're going to look, but it's another sign of a challenge that the sport is facing. Paddy Brennan speaking about how difficult it was and what a barrier it will be for people going into syndicates. And Chris, I mean, This is a worrying start of something which is wider than racing, these issues, in terms of providing improving affordability. It's more money laundering, isn't it, than gambling. So from a racing perspective, it's sort of a knock-on effect. But it's a concern, isn't it, because syndication is such a key avenue to becoming a racing owner outright.
One thinks that it's going to be more and more that way, isn't it? You know, syndication is going to be a really important part of racing's future, and a way of the sport retaining its relevance for the general public. And if barriers are suddenly thrown up like this, it's just one more difficult story, you know, at the end of a summer of difficult stories for racing. The BHA, as you say, have sort of given us the trumpet and said, don't worry, we're riding into battle, we're going to sort this all out. Leave it to us, and hopefully they can. I'm slightly surprised that this is coming from Weatherby's, that this has taken people by surprise. You know, that this couldn't have been something that was mentioned and discussed over a period, and hopefully a solution come to before suddenly it's happening and causing problems right away. Because that asking people for that kind of detail, that is going to, you know, slow down entry to the sport. It's going to put some people off, and you know, we just don't need that. Hopefully there is a way. I don't think it's even completely established that this is absolutely 100% necessary, or are they just taking a sort of belt and braces view of what the regulations say?
I think it's very unclear, and I suppose the journalist in me and the sort of cynic in me is looking at it going, well, if a syndicate member has to provide full documentation for money between £500 and £1,000, and you look at the sales which is going on where someone's buying outright, there's obviously, there's concerns about how many more people are going to be affected in the long run. Is this going to be the start of something much bigger? And
God. So the interesting thing to me was that this affects syndicates where you got, was it 10 or fewer?
10 or fewer.
And so aren't we going to see lots of 11-person syndicates from now on?
Unless they have more than 10% share, then they'll have to provide it. So there will possibly be ways of boxing around it. I mean, that's inevitable, isn't it? Which defeats the purpose.
Terrible thing, defeating the purpose of well-intentioned regulation. But nevertheless, I hear it happens.
We'll go over to you, Con. I mean, you've seen the success that syndicates had. Crystal Black being, of course, the great story in the summer. I mean, it's a shame that there's going to be further restrictions. It's a concern. I mean, syndicates are so important to the future of racing, as Chris mentioned.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we should be encouraging syndicate ownership rather than discouraging it. There's no way there should be barriers put up to syndicates getting involved in the sport. Like Crystal Black is a perfect example. Yeah, it's one of the few stories in racing, particularly in Ireland over the last couple of years, that has the ability to I suppose, break into the mainstream media. It's a syndicate who renamed their ownership after a good friend who passed away due to cancer to wear a pink ribbon syndicate. And, you know, they plucked a horse out of Dermot Wellens' yard. It's improved 35 pounds, I think, in the last 12 months, and now it's heading to Melbourne with a real proper chance. You know, I think he's joint favourite for the Melbourne Cup now. So those are the kind of stories that propel racing into the mainstream media, and those are the kind of stories that are latched onto. So to implement measures to discourage syndicate owners, it's baffling, yeah.
Yeah, sure. Well, we'll have more on that story as it continues to go. But that leaves me with a job of deciding what is going to be on the front page. A convincing enough argument there, Connor, I have to say. We discussed the Irish in depth, but 13 runners in the Judmont and such a good York. I mean, Chris, you've done it, really.
Well, like I say, I think this is the story that we all need and deserve at this stage.
You know, and so. You don't even have to recall any more odds-on defeats being chinned.
Although I could, obviously. Yep. Yeah, just give me 5 minutes.
Yeah, we could do it.
I've got a string of them.
Yeah, feature long, you know, yeah. A huge feature long.
But I will not be adding City of Troy to them. I won't be on him this week, you know,
no.
Whether he's odds-on or not.
It's a good story for racing. It's a good story for racing.
So.
It's a change.
Yeah. If you can't get excited about the kind of racing we're going to get this week, then, you know, check your pulse.
No.
Is there one?
No, there isn't. Connor, thank you very much for that, I'm afraid. It wasn't to be this week. You have to come back and try and bat for your corner again. I've been James Stevens, looking back on what a fantastic week we've got to come at York. Good luck and enjoy the racing, and we'll be back next week.